If weight management is one of your New Year goals, Quiksilver Scientific's GLP-1 Amplifier can help. This science-backed formula supports metabolic balance, curbs cravings, and promotes healthy blood sugar levels, making it easier to stay consistent and in control. It helps give your body the boost it needs to keep you on track. Feel confident and energized this year with Quiksilver Scientific's GLP-1 Amplifier. Get 10% off and free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. Again, that's tryqs.com/podcast for 10% off and free shipping. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson. Recording on Tuesday, this is your Monday show. And things kind of got away from me yesterday, and it was my mom's 75th birthday. And so I made the trip back down to South Mississippi and celebrated with her, had a chance to see my aunt and uncle and family and spend some time with them, and then had to drive back in some really, really bad weather last night. And so for all of you that are dealing with that today, my heart goes out to you. There are a lot of people in Central Mississippi that have had some difficulties due to the weather. It was pretty rough, though, man. Most of the drive was okay, but, man, it was windy. But that pales in comparison to what some other people are having to deal with. And so if you're one of those folks, no matter your rooting interest in the college athletics arena, our thoughts and prayers are with you. But nevertheless, I just wanted to offer a little bit of an explanation. My hope was to record last night, but after having to take my time to get back, and I was absolutely exhausted, I said, you know, the show's not going to be any good. I'll wait and do it in the morning. It's a busy day here on the home front. We got football practice this morning, but there is no media availability of coaches and players today. But we will have Pro Day on the Mississippi State campus today, and so we'll have full coverage of that. We'll have that over at jeanspage.com. Make that content free. You can check it out. Maybe do a few video interviews for you guys to see. As our players have the opportunity to show what they can do in front of the NFL franchises. And, of course, we had articles yesterday with Jet Johnson and Bookie Watson. And you can go read those if you haven't already. And then later this evening, of course, Mississippi State will be playing Samford over in Alabama. I'll be there to provide coverage of that. And we're going to preview that game, too, recap the weekend that was in college baseball. And, of course, Mississippi State women's basketball advances in the WBIT, so we'll share some recaps of that. We'll look ahead to what's next. You know, as the Lady Bulldogs take down TCU, and that was one of the concerns yesterday. I was like, well, maybe I'll just wait and see how this Penn State Belmont game turns out, and we'll know who we're going to play. So that was my thought process yesterday. But again, not necessarily a good weather day in the great state of Mississippi, and yeah. I would be remiss if I didn't mention this tragedy that has taken place out in Baltimore. If you guys have seen that, the Francis Key Bridge collapses in its entirety due to a collision with a cargo ship. Pretty crazy stuff. I guess in some respects you look at it and say, you know, if something like this had to happen, and there's always something, you know, whether it be human error or equipment failure or whatever, there's something that happens. It happens in the wee hours of the morning, so it lessens the death total. Not that those lives don't matter. They absolutely do. But, yeah, pretty significant story developing out there in Baltimore. And so hopefully all our Bulldog family that's in the great state of Maryland, part of this deal, right? So we hope that you guys are okay out there. A lot of that. But we did have, we got media viewing of football this morning. I will not be there. It's only 20 minutes. I'd hoped to be there to take some pictures, but it's still rather overcast today. And I needed to get the show recorded. So here we are. And I hope that you guys are doing well. Hope you're having a great week. And it's going to be a busy week for Mississippi State Athletics, as you guys are well aware. And we'll be headed down to Gainesville, Florida later this week to cover the series with the Florida Gators. Very significant win over the weekend for Florida. That's a team that's always had pitching, but they have struggled this year, mainly with midweek pitching. Been pretty competitive on the weekends, but some younger guys that they're really high on have pitched midweek and not performed. That's one of the reasons they're overall record hasn't been very impressive, but they've taken 2 of 3 from A&M, now 2 of 3 from LSU. And now we're going to head down there and have tangle with them. And so the minimum requirement for us is to get one. We want to take two. We'd love to get three. We're not expecting that. But certainly have to get one. Every weekend, you've got to get closer and closer and closer to 14 or 15 SEC wins. And so we can ill afford to have, you know, a winless weekend. Got to always avoid being swept. But the reality of that is this. Is that every game in the SEC schedule matters. You know, we get caught up sometimes, well, we won this series, yes, but we want to win every single game we possibly can because at the end of the year, they're going to stack up everybody's wins in Southeastern Conference play. They're going to rank a tournament to be played in Hoover, but in addition to that, too, you know, you need to have 14, 15 wins to make the NCAA tournament. And a lot of good reviews about how Mississippi State has played as of late, but we do drop the series against Texas A&M. We're going to talk a lot about that, and we'll push ahead into our preview of Samford and, again, get into the BIT, right? So let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of the show. I absolutely love Bulldog Burger Company. I always have. I loved them before they loved me. I suspect Brian Haydad and I were probably among their first, 100 customers. We got in there pretty quick after they opened, and both of us kind of walked away thinking, yeah, this place is going to make it. Yeah, they're going to do well. And they have. That's been years ago now. You know, and they've been with me, goodness gracious, I don't know how many years now. But I'm so proud to partner with them, a place that has really taken off in many respects. It's become a must-stop dining locale now in three great cities. University Drive here in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Go by, have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They will make you and everybody around you better looking. Great, great, great selection to choose from. You go there for the burgers, right? But don't sleep on that BLT salad. Sometimes you just want to eat fresh, right? And so, you know what, Steve? I don't want to eat real heavy, but the portions are so incredibly substantial there, even with the salads. You're going to get more than you pay for. And there's not a lot of places where you can say that, but you can at Bulldog Burger Company. So much value for your dollar at Bulldog Burger Company. I'm kind of partial to a lot of things on that menu, but I'm looking forward to the new selections. They do a kind of a refresh every now and again and introduce some new products. It's always great to get in there and have the new things. And don't ever let those Sloppy Joe sliders go to waste. It is a great lunch portion, so incredibly flavorful. But in addition to that, too, you know, we were kids when Mom made Sloppy Joes. What a treat that proved to be. You can go into Bulldog Burger Company and relive the magic of the Sloppy Joe slider. Get that chocolate shake to go. You know I'm an advocate for dessert on the road. Because late at night, you're going to want that palate cleanser, and you're probably glad you got that Shipley's bread pudding to deal with. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. Let's take a quick review. The game against Samford, against Texas A&M. We haven't played Samford yet, Steve. And so there are a lot of things I want to say about this game. The first thing that I want to say is it's very difficult to win a game when you have a hot pitcher and a home plate umpire that are on the same page, especially when that home plate umpire is giving that left-hander a ball and a half to two balls in on right-handed hitters. And that proved to be an issue, you know, throughout the game. And listen, take nothing away from Lampkin. He was outstanding. But it's tough to win a game like that. And the Bulldog bats really struggled because of it. And again, Lampkin's a guy that pitched against us last year, got a no decision. But a big ball game for him. And again, when you've got a guy like him that's able to hit his spots, and you've got a charitable umpire behind the plate that is willing to let that spot leak out of the zone, it's kind of what happens. But top of first, Stegos 1-2-3. Larry lines out. Marjan strikes out swinging. Jordan strikes out looking. It was a very lengthy at bat. A lot of K's looking in this ball game. And guys, we're not that bad of an offense. We're a really good offense. And it'd be great for us to have a umpire that gets on a roll with us at times. But bottom of one, really good start here for Gerangelo. You get Grahovic the K looking, you get Laviolette the strikeout swinging, and then Braden Montgomery rips one over the left field wall on a 2-2 count to make it a 1-0 ball game. Appelding grounds out the short. And I'm thinking, you know what? That's cool. We can navigate through the first four and only give up a run and settle into this ball game, we're probably okay. The bats will come alive at some point. Never did. At top of second, Hines strikes out looking. Hizak grounds to second, and then down strikes out swinging. So a handful of Ks already. Yeah, through two innings for the Bulldogs. Durangelo settles in here, gets a 1-2-3 inning. The ground out to short from Burton. Shot, tries to bunt to no avail, and then Camarillo strikes out swinging. Camarillo had a decent weekend against Mississippi State. All right, top of three completes the first time through the Bulldog order. Chance flies out to right. Culver strikes out looking, and Long strikes out looking. And again, these, think about this for a second here. So many of these Ks looking. And one thing that I'm going to say, I'm not going to sit here and blame it all on Morris, the home plate umpire. You got to adjust to the way it's going. I understand. Listen, I get it. It's not just the zone. It's the zone that's called that day. And sometimes the zone that's called that day is terrible, as it was this day. I understand that the TrackMan numbers were brutal, absolutely brutal. But you got to go up there looking to hit, for sure. And first time through the order, you got to figure out, hey, he's giving him a ball and a half to two balls off the plate to inside the right-hand hitters. All right, top, bottom of third, Durangelo going long just fine here. Targak lines out to short, Sorrell fouls out to left field, and Grahovic lines out to center. So the first time through, and back around to Grahovic, the leadoff hitter from A&M, we've allowed one hit and one run. And you feel like, okay, we're in it, we'll figure this thing out. But we don't. Top of four, state goes 1-2-3 again. Amani strikes out looking. And what's so crazy about this sequence here is you can tell that Lampkin wasn't trying to get the punch out. He just happened to get it. It's 0-2. And then he gifts him that inside strike. Mershon grounds out to the pitcher. And it was kind of a bad luck thing here. When this happened, I thought, you know what? This is not a good sign for us. Mershon hits that ball on the screws, and it bounces off of Lampkin and goes straight down. He's able to recover and get it and throw him out at first base. If it doesn't hit Lampkin, it's a single back up the middle. And then Jordan strikes out looking. It's tough, man. Tough zone for right-handers. Bottom of four, A&M gets a little more separation here. And again, Braden Montgomery being the villain. Laviolette gets his first hit of the weekend, a double to right field. State did a really good job holding him down much of the weekend after he absolutely killed us last year. Montgomery homers to right, makes it a 3-0 ball game. Then Appel singles down the line. You're thinking, okay, it's three consecutive hits. All those balls have struck well. But I thought Durangelo hung in here. He gets Burton strikeout swinging. Here's the wild pitch here, but then Shaq grounds out the first. And then Camarillo, for some reason, tries to bunt. I guess they're just trying to run a squeeze play. But we're all over that. We're too good at baseball to fall for that kind of stuff. But 3-0 now after four. Top of five, State finally gets their first hit of the ballgame. Hunter Hines takes a 1-0 pitch and doubles down the right field line. And so you think, here we are, leadoff double. And you got some guys behind them swinging pretty hot bats here. We ought to be able to push this run across. Connor Hizak does get a hit later in this ballgame to extend his hitting streak to 11. But in this situation here, he flies out to center field. Aaron Downs goes down swinging, and then Chance grounds out the first unassisted. So we waste a leadoff double. Needed to find a way to get that run home. Bottom of five, A&M adds to the lead here. Targak grounds out to third, and then Sorrell, who did not play against us in games 1 and 2, homers to right field, makes it a 4-0 ball game. We get Grahovic, who had been a difficult out all weekend long, but now three times to the plate against Durangelo. He's got nothing to show for it. He lines out to left, and then Laviolette doubles again. So back-to-back hits for the Aggie center fielder. Montgomery is unintentionally walked, which is absolutely the right decision to make. And then for some reason, Laviolette just takes off, and State picks him off. State still leading the Southeastern Conference in pickoffs. That, again, is a byproduct of the Justin Parker hire. All right, top of six, State goes 1-2-3 again. Culver flies out to left. Long strikes out looking. And again, this is a ball that's clearly in, and we get a strikeout. Larry flies out to left center, and that's top of six. The Aggies get one more in the bottom of six. Appel doubles to right center, so they kind of do here what we needed to do after that Hines leadoff double. Appel doubles to right center, and really good hitter for them. Entered the weekend as their top hitter from an average standpoint. Burton then flies out to right, but you push the runner to third here. And then Shot flies out to left, and it's an RBI sack fly to make it a 5-0 ball game. Camarillo's hit by the pitch. The baseball guy's kind of firing on him for a bunt with two outs, and then Targag reaches on a fielder's choice. They force Camarillo at second. But again, A&M in this situation does what good teams do. When you get that leadoff double, you find a way to get it home. You manufacture the run. All right, top of seven. Stega's 1-2-3 again. Mershon grounds out to short. Jordan strikes out looking again. And again, this ball is clearly in. And then home plate umpire pulls off his mask and yells at DJ. I don't know what DJ said. And it's so interesting, too. I'm going to talk about this a little bit because I think it's important. Guys, the standard of behavior for umpires is the highest. It's the highest. And then it's coaches and it's players. Somebody has to be the grown-up in the family, right? When you're facilitating the rules and you're navigating through a ball game as an umpire, you can never show emotion. Ever. You can't. You certainly can't make it seem personal. And it really felt like it was. I don't know what the situation was. I know Morris is from Kosciuszko. Maybe he was a rebel growing up and wasn't good enough to play there, so he went to UAB. I don't know. But I know that we did not get a fair shake here with the play. We got to adjust. But the bottom line is, the longer this ball game went, the wider that play got in to right-handed hitters. Hansen grounds out to short. At this point, we all know how this game is going to go, right? We're going to lose, just no matter what the final score is going to be. And then again, the same scenario unfolds here. You get a leadoff double from Sorrell, and A&M finds a way to get the run home. Grahovic finally gets through with an RBI single. That kid's really, really good. The run comes home, makes it 6-0. We bring in Carson Ligon, who has been really good now in three consecutive appearances. Laviolette strikes out swinging. Montgomery flies out the center. Appel grounds out the short. So, you know, 1-2-3 there for Ligon after he comes in relief of Durangelo. Top of eight, Heisek with the hitting streak in jeopardy. Gets a single center field. He really hit this ball well, too. So leadoff hitter, and then Downs strikes out swinging. Aaron, really rough weekend at A&M. It's clear that he's definitely a part of the scout, right? He had a big weekend against LSU, and A&M is like, nope, that's not going to happen. Bryce Chance works for a walk here. Now you got runners at first and second. They bring in Ashton back, and we saw him in the Thursday game. Knew we'd probably see him again. He didn't pitch enough in Thursday to limit his availability for the weekend. And then Logan Kohler comes up and singles to left center. To drive in the runs, the state's on the board at 6-1. And you start thinking we're going to need kind of a miraculous comeback here. But maybe this is an opportunity for us to put up a crooked number. Johnny Long then fouls out to left field, and Larry flies out to right. That ends the inning and the scoring threat. We head to bottom of eight. We bring in Brooks Auger. And Brooks needed to get some work. He hadn't pitched much here as of late because we've had separation in games and really hadn't needed the closer. But I thought he was really good here. He gets Burton to foul out the third, shot out at first. First base to pitcher there on the ground out. And then Camarillo strikes out swinging. Pretty filthy stuff there from Brooks. And then top of nine, Mercy. You ever Googled yourself? You may be alarmed to know exactly how much of your private information and data is out there for anybody to access. Whether it be your phone number, your home address, or details about your family. It could be your kids' names, their ages. Whether you agree to this disclosure or not, and that's because data brokers are collecting and selling your information to marketers, scammers, and basically anyone willing to pay. It's the reason robocallers know your name, and while ads seem to follow you on every digital platform out there. Well, Aura fights back for you. They remove your personal data from broker sites and keep it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a data breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just data broker removal. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your life online. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager to keep all your logins safe, and they even give you spam call protection to cut off those stupid scammers. Aura also scans the dark web regularly for your most sensitive information, like your social security number, bank logins, passwords, and they will notify you instantly if you are somehow exposed. If your identity is ever stolen, you're backed up by up to $5 million in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support to help you recover everything quickly. Other services charge about the same, but they only cover one or two areas. With Aura, you get it all. Data broker removal, credit and identity monitoring, device protection, and fraud support, all with one simple app. Aura removes what is already exposed, protects what isn't, and puts you back in control. Right now, you can try Aura free for 14 days when you visit aura.com/remove. That gives them plenty of time to go ahead and start protecting your data. They can remove your personal information from data broker sites. Sign up today at aura.com/remove and get the peace of mind that your privacy, identity, and finances are all safeguarded. That's Aura, AURA.com/remove. Certain terms and conditions apply. Be sure and check it out today at aura.com.
Comfort is often the first thing we're willing to give up, like taking a long flight for a vacation or waking up early for a workout. But don't let style be the reason you aren't comfy. Mack Weldon's Ace Collection makes it effortless to look put together while feeling truly comfortable. Inspired by their best-selling sweatpants, the Ace Collection combines everyday comfort with long-lasting and confident looks. Upgrade your collection for the new year with bomber jackets, half zips, sweats, crew necks, and much more. Get comfortable anywhere with Mack Weldon's Ace Collection. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25. That's MACKWELDON.com. Promo code MACK25.
Para mi familia, siempre estoy en mi mejor momento. Por eso también quiero lo mejor en mi cocina. Y eso significa solamente huevos de Eggland Best. Siempre tienen un sabor tan fresco y delicioso, con 6 veces más vitamina D, 10 veces más vitamina E y 25% menos grasas saturadas que los huevos comunes. Entonces, ¿por qué darle menos a tu familia cuando pueden tener lo mejor? Eggland's Best. Mejor sabor, mejor nutrición, mejores huevos.
Concay swinging, Jordan lines out to right, and then Hines strikes out looking. Now, I want to talk about this. This pitch was a little bit borderline. As bad as his own has been, you almost got to kind of expect it. Hines, of course, unhappy about it, which is kind of uncharacteristic of Hunter. He may get frustrated. He turns and says something to the official, and then the official says something to him, and I've heard some things that were said. They were completely inappropriate. And then as Hines begins to back away, recognizing the situation is escalating, he is pursued and then bumped into by the umpire. That is indisputable. I have seen some people, some Mississippi State people, that have tried to defend this. There is no defense of this. Now, you say, well, Steve, you're picking sides here. Yes, I'm always going to pick the Mississippi State side, but I'm going to call it for what it is. Hunter shouldn't have said anything. Yes, but he did say something. That does not excuse the situation for an SEC official to pursue a player that is retreating to initiate physical contact. That is inexcusable. And to be honest with you, I think it's embarrassing to Mississippi State that we have fans out here defending that. Why in the world would you defend that? You're absolutely wrong. I'm just going to tell you, right? I would tell you to your face in front of your family, you're wrong. If you think that is acceptable behavior. And you know what? Both of them are wrong in some respects. But again, the burden of adulthood falls to the official. You got to be a pro. And people, oh, Steve, he was just trying to leave. No, he was not. You see the video, and it's so funny when ESPN showed the slow-mo replay on the network. They cut it right as he bumps into Hines. Now, I suspect we'll see all this blow over, but I don't think that because of the fact there was so much social media traffic and you saw Ben McDonald and Tom Hart and others that were involved in this, that the SEC will do something. Now, what that proves to be, you know, I don't know. But I will be watching the box scores here this weekend to see if Morris got an SEC assignment. I want to know. Because I think it's completely unacceptable. It is. And again, it's like, I don't understand these people like, well, Hunter shouldn't have said anything. You know, I agree with that aspect of it. The ball game is over. It's a 6-1 ball game. It's not like bases were loaded and we were down one, right? I get that aspect of it. But this guy behind the plate had been terrible the entire day. And that's not an opinion. I got knowledge of the numbers. He was terrible. And he had an attitude throughout the ballgame. Takes his mask off and yells at DJ. It's unacceptable. It's absolutely unacceptable for this to continue. Now, I don't know what Morris Hodges' situation is. I don't know. Maybe he's your friend. I don't know. I don't understand any of that. And at the end of the day, I don't care. At no point should an official ever, ever initiate contact with a student athlete. That should absolutely never happen. And to see Mississippi State people, and there's only been a handful of them, but to see people defend that is embarrassing. Absolutely embarrassing. It's absolutely wrong. And to suggest otherwise, I know there are some people out there that want to see Chris Simonis fired, right? Which is not a good thing for Mississippi State. And you can have your own opinion. I won't begrudge you that. But it's like anything that happens, we want to try to find a way to make it about somehow Mississippi State is at fault. I get tired of the blame state first mentality from our own fans. I do. I really, really do. There are two things that I wish we could breed out of this fan base. Two things. Number one, those that always, always expect something bad to happen to Mississippi State. That our expectations are not good. It's always, you know, hey, like somehow we deserve it. You know, we got to breed that part out of the fan base. And the second thing is people that have this blame first state mentality. And it's like immediately, like, well, hey, why didn't you go defend your player? Well, number one, Chris Simonis and the staff were trying to prevent Hunter Hines from getting a post-game ejection. Do you understand what I'm saying there? I don't think many of you understand the distinction between an in-game ejection and a post-game ejection. But I'm going to explain it to you. If you were ejected in a game, while the game is still going on, it is a one-game suspension. You miss the next game. And that's an NCAA rule. It's not an SEC rule. You get ejected post-game, it's a three-game suspension. He gets ejected before strike three is thrown, it's one game. He gets ejected after strike three is thrown, it's a three-game deal. It's not an insignificant penalty, especially when you're getting ready to go play Florida. Yeah, it's like I thought about, hey, you know, if he gets an ejection here and he misses a Samford game, we're gonna need him. Samford's a good ball club. Don't get me wrong. We should win, but it's still a good ball club. And you don't want to go over there handicapped. But if we got to miss him two games against Florida, the weekend's a wash, guys. Period. But I'm going to say this, and I don't care whose feelings it hurts. If an official ever puts their hands on a Mississippi State student athlete, whether it be baseball, basketball, football, women's basketball, whatever, golf, tennis, tiddlywinks, Chinese checkers, in an attempt to intimidate them, there needs to be an inquiry. Now, I'm told the league is looking into this. Again, I don't know what the penalties will be or if there'll be any. I don't know. But, you know, of course, I could have got out there and, you know, written some article and gotten everybody all fired up and everything else. And, you know, we'll just let it play out, let the league do what they do. But I think we, as a Mississippi State family and a fan base, we have to defend our players. And you know what else that you probably don't know? Is that 90% of the people involved with Mississippi State baseball on that day didn't realize what had happened. They didn't realize that Morris had gone up and bumped Hunter Hines. They didn't realize that. But immediately we jump out here and we get critical. I don't understand. Why are you yelling at that guy? We're trying to get him to get away, guys. You got a bunch of you got 7,000 Texas A&M people celebrating a series win. You know, we're trying to protect our guy. Hunter Hines is our guy. And so you're welcome to disagree with me on a lot of things. But I'm going to tell you this. You know, I can't stop you from having your own opinion. But I'm going to challenge this nonsense. And I've had some people on Twitter trying to say, oh. And it was so funny, too, is like when the evidence began to kind of come out, at first like, oh, it was no, that didn't happen. And then all of a sudden you see the evidence. Then it's like, then we stop and say, oh, well, probably broke his shoulder, right, Steve? You know, going to be all sarcastic. So it's like, first, we're wrong, okay? Completely wrong. And then as it comes out that we've been proven wrong, then we want to try to diminish what's happened and in some way blame Hunter Hines. Where are we as a fan base? When that we're rooting for the umpire now? Really? What Morris did is unacceptable. Period. I don't care the quality of season we're having. I don't care about your opinion of our coach. I don't care what you thought about the ball game. That situation that unfolded is completely unacceptable. That should never happen in any sport to any student athlete. You say, Steve, it ain't that big a deal. I went through worse. You know, we've evolved a little bit as a society since you and I played. You know, I grew up in a time, you know, when football coach would grab your face masks to get your attention, and everybody said, you know what, hey, that's good hard coaching. It's true. You know, things are a little bit softer these days. But to have a guy that goes out there that is in charge to facilitate a game and enforce the rules behave in this manner is completely unacceptable. Regardless of how the game finished. I would feel that way even if we won. When it first happened, I couldn't believe it. I think, oh, Steve, you're just being sensitive. Yeah, maybe I am being. Yeah, in favor of our player, our Bulldog baseball All-American first baseman. Period. Well, you don't know what was said. It doesn't matter what was said. How about we just stop excusing negative behavior and instead of trying to find a way to explain negative behavior? I don't care why he did it. He shouldn't have done it. Period. That's important to understand. It's like, and you see it all the time. Like, you'll see people that be attacked on Twitter. Like, all these videos will be making the rounds, and all of a sudden you'll see some high school kid that's been, like, jumped on by three or four people and beaten to a pulp. And there's always that one idiot that comes up, well, I wonder what he did to deserve that. What? Really? Where are we as a society? It's nuts, man. Well, I wonder what he said. Like, that excuse is what happens next. It's a different day and time. You know, and again, maybe I'm aging out. Maybe I'm just getting too old for this stuff. Maybe, you know, maybe I just need to go, you know, move out of the desert or something, live off the fatted land or something. You know, I don't get it. I don't understand that line of thinking. That the first thing that some Mississippi State fans, the first thing we do is to blame Hunter Hines. That's the first thing we do. And, of course, I'm sure I'll get some reaction. Well, Steve, he shouldn't have said anything. You know, I agree. He shouldn't have. In the heat of the moment, he made a mistake. But then he's retreating away. He deserves to have an umpire. That excuses everything else? Is that what you're telling me? That everything else, because he said something in anger, he deserved what happened next? Well, Steve, it wasn't that big a deal. Yes, it is a big deal. It is a big deal. It's not like he trucked him, but you should have touched him. It's completely inappropriate. And there absolutely should be something from the league. Now, they won't make it public. We'll have to go dig for it to see. But you better believe I'll be checking every box score from every SEC game this weekend to see if that guy got an SEC assignment. At the end of the day, the more important thing is that Hunter Hines was not given a post-game ejection. And he's available to play this week, unless something's come down in the last 24 hours that I'm unaware of, and I can't believe there would be. But and the main thing is we're able to navigate through a very difficult incident, and our roster still be intact. And that's the most important thing. The rest of this will blow over. The league will handle it. But, you know, I've got a real problem with our people not defending our player. You say, well, Lamontis this and Lamontis that. So that excuses you? You're right. And again, Lamontis is trying to protect his guy. You saw he kind of hides that, kind of usher Hines away from every bit of that. But it's so funny. The same people that want to blame Lamontis are also blaming Hunter Hines. I'm beginning to think it's not a Mississippi State problem. I think in some respects it's a you problem. All right, time for today's top 10 list. As always, brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R. Guys, Blair is a mortgage professional, and chances are at some point in your life, you're going to need some mortgage help. You're going to need somebody to help you buy a house, buy a game day condo, which is always a nice addition to life, right? Wouldn't it be great to have a place here in Starkville? And maybe it's more affordable than you think. Hit up Blair. He can help you get pre-qualified, kind of let you know what you need to do to navigate through the labyrinth that often exists in the underwriting process. Give Blair a text or call today at 601-500-2344. 601-500-2344. Of course, he is a Boneyard listener, part of the Boneyard family, and has been for a long time. There's also a Bulldog, got a place here in town. He's a guy that's been doing this 23 years. A lot of people out there want your business, but you know what? When it comes to your mortgage, it's better not to just play favorites. It's better to stick with the winner, and that's Blair. Now part of the Priority One Mortgage family. God, it's been top 1% close ratio in the country back-to-back-to-back years. Give Blair's Chandler's know-how and expertise working for you. Visit the website today, closewithblair.com. Again, at 601-500-2344. Okay. As I mentioned, I had to navigate through that weather last night, and I survived. Okay, I'm not trying to victimize myself here, make it about me. But when I travel, a lot of times I listen to a Dateline podcast. Keith Morris and I have traveled all over this country together. Yeah, thank you, Keith. And Andrew Canning and everybody involved with Dateline podcast. I enjoy those. I really do. I usually don't listen to a lot of sports podcasts because I don't like the cloud in my own vision. I listen to Robbie and Brian every now and again. You know, it's mainly when I take a long road trip, I'll get caught up, you know, on their shows. But last night I listened to some tunes too. You know, I'm a rocker. And I remembered last night, it was a song, I got an earworm of a song that I absolutely loved. And it's on our list today. And so I texted Roy and said, hey, Roy, all hands free texting. Roy, have we done this band? Now, they have changed. Johnny Craig was the singer, and he's got a little bit of an R&B vibe to his voice, but he's very much a rocker. And these guys were a band that formed among five friends that were in recovery. It's a band called Slaves. Then they changed their name from Slaves to Rain City Drive when they got a new singer. But also, too, that was all part of the cancel culture aspect of it. You know, they picked Slaves as their name because they were slaves to addiction and chemical dependency. And a lot of people thought, you know, there may be some other connotations to this, so let's kind of move away from this. So they're now Rain City Drive. And I love Rain City Drive. In fact, I've got some Rain City Drive lyrics tattooed on my chest. But going back to the infancy of this band, I really felt that Slaves was a band that was really on the ascension track. And there are so many of you from time to time that will say, hey, Steve, that was a really great vocal. It's difficult to find great vocalists. Johnny Craig is an amazing singer. And some of the stuff that I love from Slaves is more of the acoustic stuff that really features his vocal. And when you're a singer like me, you need the strength of the full band, right, to kind of cover up some mistakes. But Johnny Craig is the guy that can just step up there with an acoustic guitar and belt out an amazing song and put chill bumps all over your body. An incredible singer. So I want to give you my top 10 Slaves songs. Number 10, a song that's really rather interesting. It's called One God, and it's in quotations. And I initially thought this was about the higher power concept. It's not. There's some lyrics in here I want to share with you, too. And, you know, some of this, of course, all very personal. So it's all in the interpretation, right? But a thing that always stands out is the chorus of the song. The things that last never happen overnight. These calloused hands built the foundation of my life. Abandoned for love, left with no advice. How quickly we can change overnight. Funny that happens. And again, you see the correlation there about the whole overnight. And it's the truth in life, right? Everything worth having requires work. If we spend all this time waiting to be discovered and things like that, it never happens. You got to get yourself out there. All right, number 9, this is a crazy title. Now, there's two versions of the song. There is the rocking version. There is the acoustic version. On our top 10, we're going to go with the acoustic version. And it's called My Soul is Empty and Filled with White Girls. So, you know, it's really a chance to be silly. The song itself really is not in any way a correlation to that title, but it does kind of stand out. When I share this This EP, that Revision EP, is absolutely beautiful. It is. It's just one of those albums that you can put on from start to finish and be amazed with each song and say, hey, that's the best song on this album. And then the next one comes on and you, when it ends, you're thinking, that's the best song on this album. But My Soul is Empty and Full of White Girls, that's your number nine song today. There, again, there's two versions, the rock version, and then, of course, the acoustic version on the Revision album. The original version is on their debut album, Through Art, We Are All Equals. Some truth in that, too. Number seven, off the second album, Routine Breathing. I absolutely love this song. It wasn't a single. It's one of these deeper tracks. It features a duet with Tillian Pearson, who is an incredible vocalist in her own right. It's a great song called Winter Everywhere. And basically, it's about a relationship. It's like, hey, things are good today, but you know, there's some times I wish we could go back into our car, as if they were living in their car, perhaps they spent their whole time, you know, traveling. But a song called Winter Everywhere, that's your number seven track today. You know what, I skipped one. I did. Let me back up. Number eight on our list is Pretty Trappin' off the Beautiful Death album. Absolutely love that one. And then flashback to number seven, Winter Everywhere. Again, it's just kind of a hidden gem tucked away in the early part of their catalog. I think you'll really dig that one. Number six, and again, there's two versions of this song. Now, we're going to go with the acoustic version because many of you have gotten so soft and delicate. But it's a great track from the Beautiful Death album, which I think is their best one. They released To Better Things and then changed the name of the band to Rain City Drive. But it was initially released under the Slaves moniker. But the last song on the Beautiful Death album is a song called The Pact. Now, what's interesting is there's actually a pact within the song. I love both versions. I do. I think that, as you hear me typing, I think the acoustic version really allows the lyrics to resonate. But here is the pact within the song. And again, it's basically, it's about a relationship, right? It's like, hey, we're figuring this thing out, and breaking up's not an option for us. And so there's a part in the chorus that says, listen, let's make a pact right here, right now. Let's make a pact right here, right now. You keep your hopes up that I can change. Well, I'll stay honest. You do the same. I'll keep my purpose. You keep your faith. Then we can get through this, these tougher days. It's beautiful. It's absolute poetry. And again, I like the original version on the Beautiful Death, but the acoustic version on that Revision EP is just absolutely magical. From that same EP, number five on our list, and again, one of the greatest gifts that I could give you is the gift of music. This six-song EP from Slaves, Revision EP, is absolutely amazing. I can't sell it enough. I can't. And there are five of the six songs on this EP are acoustic versions of earlier hits, right? And there's a single, too, that they added. We'll get to momentarily. But number five is a track called Down for the Ride. It's also a bit of a duet. And again, it's a relationship song, you know. It's kind of like, you know, no matter what happens in life, no matter what adversity we face, I'm down for this. We're going to stick together. We'll figure all this stuff out together. Great track. Number four is also a relationship song, but it's not so, you know, sweet, I guess you could say. Great track, and it's called Let This Haunt You. It's the fourth track on Beautiful Death. And basically, this is one about, you know, I can't believe you treat me the way you do. You know, tell me all the reasons that you treat me this way. And we've all been there at some point, right? Or maybe all your relationships have been good. Chances are if you've had multiple relationships, they haven't all been good, right? Somebody's done something to end it. But that's what it's about. Let This Haunt You. I think while it was a limited single in release, I suspect that most people have never heard this one. And I can't recommend it enough. Even if you're not in a troubled relationship or single now, I think everybody can relate. It's a very relatable track. But I think the vocal performance on this is among the best in Johnny Craig's career. All right, number three, and this is going to be our last song from the Revision EP, even though Our top two are also on that revision EP. I prefer the rock versions better. But number three, an absolute incredible track. I would submit to you, this is one of the sexiest songs of the last decade that most people don't know. And it's a song called Body on Fire. And basically what it's about is about spending a night with somebody for the first time. When you're in a relationship. You know, it's not some one-night stand thing. But the reality of it is this is one of those songs vocally, and the composition on this song are just absolutely amazing. I don't care what you listen to. I don't care if you like R&B or if you like country, you like rock. I think this song appeals to everybody. And if you've ever been in that situation, it's like, you know what, I just want to be alone with this person for a while. You know, we go out, we have a good time, we hang with our friends. But I just want to have some level of intimacy where we just kind of have a chance to connect one-on-one. That's what that track is about, and it is absolutely amazing. Cold Nights and Closed Eyes. Amazing. Body on Fire. That's your number three track. Number two, this is another one of those breakup songs. Now, the revision EP version makes it a little bit easier to hear the lyrics, but I love the rock version because I think a song like this has to have a certain level of angst with it. And it's called True Colors. Did I get too close and you have your true colors exposed? So much of that, right? It's like you begin to figure somebody out and you realize that the facade they put up on social media and putting their best foot forward is crazy. But there's a line in there that always kind of stands out to me. And I think that I speak for all men when I say this. And maybe there's some women that feel the same way. But there's a line in there that talks about when you let your imperfection show, that's when I really loved you the most. Yeah, it's like I loved you for who you were and who you are, and not just for who you want to be and who you claim to be and the image that you portray. But True Colors, great, great song. And again, you can tell these lyrics are not just the product of sitting down and having a writing session and say, hey, this sounds good. You can tell there's got to be some personal connection to it. But number one, we don't know who, but Johnny had a relationship with a female singer in a rock band that was beginning to ascend, and her star was on the rise. And Johnny wrote this song, and the lyrics don't match the title, but he wrote this song about the dismay of the relationship pretty much evolving. A lot of it was career related. You know, there were bands, both of them were having some level of success, but her star was on the rise. And so there is a little bit of honesty in this and pettiness. Your number one track today from Slaves is I'd Rather See Your Star Explode. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. But again, the lyrics, incredible. Probably the biggest hit from this band. I remember when they began to play this on Sirius XM Octane. I said, you know what? These guys are really going somewhere. These guys are going to have a great future. And ultimately, Johnny left the band. Had some erratic behavior, and the band decided to move on from him. They never really discussed all the details behind that. They hired a new singer and recorded an incredible album that maybe you're familiar with Rain City Drive. Again, it was Slaves at the time, but they ended up changing the name, changed your label, everything. Matt McAndrew joined the band, and they released the album To Better Days. And that album from start to finish is just an absolute blister. I mean, everything about that album is absolutely incredible. But again, that's with the new singer. And so that's when they basically decided back in 2020, when things were crazy, they changed the name to Rain City Drive and re-released the album under the name Rain City Drive. So if you're looking for that, you're probably not going to find it under the Slaves Apple Music or Spotify channel. You'll find it under Rain City Drive. And we've done a Rain City Drive top 10, but I wanted to go back over the discography of the Slaves era of this band. And Johnny out doing some solo stuff. And some of you may remember too that there was a band, kind of got a little buzz in the early Octane days, called Dance Gavin Dance. Johnny was the lead singer of that group, too. Now, this isn't Johnny Craig from Space Hawk, completely different guy. But an incredible singer. The guy's had some issues, all of us addicts have. He was Born in North Dakota, but spent most of his life in Canada, and returned to the United States and sought a recording career, and has had a really, 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 really good run. But there are bands that I love that we don't talk about a lot on the show, and I have so many of you that are Octane listeners that reach out and say, "Hey, Steve, thanks for kind of pushing some new rock too." This is not an '80s hair band, but I love so many elements about the Slaves catalog. But I cannot recommend that Revision EP enough. It's six incredible songs with incredible vocal delivery, and it's just 26 minutes. So if you got a half hour drive to make and you're thinking, "I'd like to hear some really cool tunes and hear them performed at a very high level," then put on this EP. And it's not, again, it's not heavy metal or any stretch like that. It's a rock band kind of doing the unplugged thing, even though it's not completely acoustic. It's all kind of tuned down and kind of laid back. And it's great traveling music. It is. So that's our top 10 for today. If you have ideas for the top 10 list, reach out, let us know. Best way to do that is to hit up Roy Samanti, my friend, on Twitter at Dogmatic67, DAWGMATIC67. And our great list can be found on Spotify under that same handle. I'd encourage you just to maybe give that a shot, right? And just received news too that how cool is this? When the Bottom Falls, still on the best seller list, currently number five. Yeah, currently number five. Let me look who else is on this list. It's so funny too. There's so many people that they think it's just all us Mississippi folk, but it's not. There's a bunch of Mississippi people on here, obviously. Let's see what's on here. Let's see. Number one is The Delta in the Rearview Mirror. I'm trying to see. I haven't read that. I'm trying to see who wrote that. I apologize. Number two on your Mississippi Best Hours list is John Grisham's The Exchange. Number three is Wandering Stars by Tommy Orange. That's a name. Beto O'Rourke. I don't like to get political. We've got to try number four. You guys got to get me ahead of that. And then When the Bottom Falls, number five on the Mississippi Best Sellers list. How cool is that? Number six, A Place Like Mississippi. Seven, Martyr by Kaveh Akbar. Number eight, Mississippi Burnings by Robert St. John. And then I can't make out the title here for our number nine book, but number 10 is Kristen Hannah, The Women. So thank you. It never gets old, guys. It never, ever, 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 ever gets old. Ever. And, you spend so much time and effort writing these books, and you hope people are paying attention. You hope people are buying the books, and you hope that it's not just, "Hey, go buy the book so I can go pay the light bill." When you write a book like When the Bottom Falls, you want to make sure that you're doing something that helps other people. And I had some people last night, my family, that I have not seen since they read the book, and it was uncomfortable for a lot of them because they didn't know how bad I was hurting back then. They didn't know. And I share that not in any way to praise myself, but just to simply say that when you write a book like that, it's a different dynamic. And I've shared this with you guys before. Like when I've written, sports books, you get high fives. You know what I mean? It's like when I wrote Dogpile, people come in wearing all their Mississippi State gear, wearing their Omaha shirts, your College World Series, National Championship shirts, and they walk up and they give you a high five and say, "Hey, Steve, we finally did it. We finally did it. We finally have our year. This was our year." But when the book signings for When the Bottom Falls comes, it's a completely different dynamic. I got a lot of people that would never buy a sports book that have bought that book. And there's a lot more hugs and a lot less high fives. Because a lot of people out there are hurting. A lot of people out there are hurting. And so I wrote a book about my pain, what I've done to overcome it, to try to help other people. And there's not a lot of yelling. There's not a lot of commemorative t-shirts. But there's a lot of people that come up and say, "Hey, Steve, my son. Steve, my daughter, my husband, my wife, my brother, my coworker, my neighbor is dealing with all of this." And people act like it's all such a joke. It's not a joke. and see how you feel when it happens to somebody that you love. There's a lot of people that are very judgy about all this. It's not an issue of morality. If you listen to my show, you understand, you know, I never aspired to be a drug addict. You know, I wanted to party like everybody else. I just couldn't party like everybody else. I just couldn't do it. Then when I got out of jail, I was going to go back and do music again. I just couldn't be around that element. I just couldn't do it. It was going to kill me. I'm just wired a little differently. Like, there's some of you that can go have like two beers and like you're, it's done. I can go out with the friends and shoot some pool and have a couple of Bud Light long necks and call it a night. That was never me. Ever. I wish that could be me. I wish that I could come home at night or after a ball game and, you know, just have a beer and be able to just kind of chill out and watch a little TV and wind down. But that's not me. It's not. Every time that I used or did drugs or whatever or did drink, it was always one of the epic night. Always. You know, it may start off in the 3G Daiquiri Depot in Bogalusa, and hopefully I was able to get home. Hopefully. Get back into bed, anything stupid happening. But sometimes it did. And other times I'd head down to Slidell, or we'd have a Cervello show in Baton Rouge. I'd wind up in New Orleans, and the next thing you know, we're all at strip clubs trying to get cocaine, things like that. I mean, it's just, it all sounds fun, but here's the deal, too. At some point, the ride ends, right? And so when I wrote that book, I thought to myself, I don't want to die with all the things that I've learned about recovery, all the things that I've learned about life. I didn't want that to die with me. And so there was a need in me that had to be fulfilled in writing that book. And fortunately, there's been a lot of other people that have read that book and gotten some value from it. And it's funny, you know, I'm writing the Duty Noble biography. And so when I went to go interview Frances Ami and Mitzi Banks Steels, who were Duty Noble's nieces, I brought both of them a copy, When the Bottom Falls. I felt it's the least that I could do with them, you know, giving me this story, you know, and sharing their experience with me. I gave both of them the book, and Mitzi talked at length about chapter 19. She went on Facebook. She didn't text me directly. She put it on Facebook, and she goes, I just finished this book. And she goes, every time that I'm down, I need some encouragement, I'm going to go back and read chapter 19. I think chapter 19 of When the Bottom Falls may be the most important words that I ever write in my entire life. It's true. That's how I feel about it. And I remember before I got to write that chapter, and it's like I had written that book in 27 days. And I got to the end of it, and I was like, I've got to nail this last chapter. I have to. Because it's going to be my last words to the still-suffering addict. My words of encouragement to families that have people that they love that are battling with addiction. And in some respect, every family is battling with addiction. It may not be active addiction. It may be recovery now. But every family in some way is negatively impacted by addiction or alcoholism. Or gambling issues, no matter what the drug of choice is. You know, pornography, there's always something, right? We all have a trigger. Some of us just don't handle that well, you know. And I'll be honest with you, I don't know that the pathology of all this stuff, but, you know, I always had a self-destructive nature, always. And even now, like, whenever something happens, there's some negative stimuli, the very first thing that I can think of is probably the worst. And it's not always, hey, let me go run and get loaded. It's usually like, how can I hurt this person the worst way possible? You know, and I've done some incredibly cruel things to people over the years. I have. I admit it freely. But I'm the kind of person you really don't want to have a competition with when it comes to that sort of thing. Because I got a devious streak in me, man. I'm just going to tell you. I'm very vindictive at times. And I have learned not to be vindictive to the people that I love, but when there are people, of course, that that maybe don't love me, that want to attack me, my initial reaction is to just absolutely destroy these people. But I've learned through recovery that, number one, I can't act that way, but also how to handle the negative feelings that get stirred up when that negative stimuli comes along. How do you deal with it? It's okay to think it. You just don't do it, right? I think it. You know, somebody launches a bottle rocket at my house, I want to drop a nuclear warhead on theirs, you know. I've never been a person that was scared of mutually assured destruction, right? That just wasn't me. And so maybe you're dealing with that sort of stuff. And I think, you know, again, you know, when I get to the end of it all, I'd love to be able to know, you know, kind of why and how I was the person that I was. And You know, but the reality of it is some, there are so many factors. There's environmental issues, there's genetic issues. There's a lot to it. There is. But so much of this behavior can be modified. You know, we're not just hopeless, you know, wild savages out there running around. You know, you can learn. You can. I did. I've been doing this now for over 32 years. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I hadn't wanted to have a drink in the last 32 years. I have. Yeah, 2022 was one of the longest years of my life. It was very. If I was going to relapse, that probably would have been it. And that's me being honest with you because I love each and every one of you. It's the truth. It was tough. It really was. There's so many things about that year that were difficult to deal with. So many. And I was alone a lot. And that's the thing that we've learned over the years is that an addict alone is in bad company. You know, because, you know, I don't have that buffer, right? I don't have that person that'll say, hey, let's go watch Netflix and unwind a little bit and let my mind rest, of course. And so I just share that with you. I didn't plan to spend that much time on that this day. But again, the text came over that we're number five on the bestseller list. And this is months after release. And so I just think that book could probably help you or help some people around you. And I've got some people that have bought 10, 12 books. You know, hey, I'm buying this for everybody that I know in recovery. Or I'm buying this from everybody in our family because we're trying to help our niece. Try to give everybody a new understanding about every bit of this and how it all works and what we can do to help them. And I'm available to you. I am. It may take me a while to respond. You find me on social media, you message me, I'll get back to you. I'll do my best, assuming that I see it. But I want you to know, and maybe this is one of those things too, you know, going back home yesterday and being around my uncle, who was my idol when I was a kid, and my aunt, who never had children, and she'll tell you that I'm the closest thing to a child she ever had. We're so much alike, and she was very instrumental in raising me. I lived with my grandparents until I was 8 years old. And so I share that with you because when I was back yesterday, it's the first time we'd all been together since the book was released, and there are a lot of things in there. And I told my family before I wrote it, I said, you know, there are going to be some things going to make you uncomfortable. You might not want to read it. Because I'm not writing this for you. I'm writing this for the still suffering addict. And I got to go out there and write about some things that are very negative and in some respects very embarrassing because of the fact I have to establish credibility with the reader who is a person that is dealing with something that is life-changing, some serious trauma. They got to understand that I'm legit. I got to share this stuff that maybe that you don't want me to talk about. And there's a lot of people in my family that wish I wasn't quite so transparent. But I'm alive today because of that. And so being around them last night, it really kind of stirred up some emotions. And my uncle told me it's the best book he's ever read. You know, of course, he's biased. And I had one of my aunt Kathy, who I love, and I would go to war behind her. She goes, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. I got to apologize. I haven't been able to finish it because it's been so difficult for me to read. And she said, I just want to know where I was when all this was going on. And of course, it's like, hey, it's not your fault. You know, I made my own decisions. Nobody could have saved me from myself. And that's an important dialogue to have with people. But until you reach that point in recovery, when you can take responsibility for your actions and understand that you're not a victim, but a volunteer, you can't really reach that level of understanding. And to be able to kind of free other people, right, of the burdens that they carry around thinking that somehow they're responsible for your behavior. It's a lot of that. But I want to thank you guys so much for buying the book. I hope that it blesses you. And if you haven't bought the book, go to winterbottomfalls.com and you can order that book and all my sports titles. That includes Alpha Dog, Stark Villains, Flim Flam, Dog Pile. And every bulldog needs a copy of Dog Pile. And give you a quick Duty Noble book update, the dude. As great as Chapter 19 was in When the Bottom Falls, I think one of the most important stories about Mississippi State athletics and the state Ole Miss rivalry is contained in Chapter 5 of The Dude. It's a story that many people, there's probably only a handful of people alive that know the story. And I'm able to chronicle all that and detail that out in Chapter 5. And I told my agent, publisher, I was like, listen, here's the deal. This chapter is one of those ones. This is the chapter I think people are going to talk about. I said, I'd be honest with you, I need to take my time and nail this one. I got to get all the details right because I think some people are going to be shocked about the story. because they don't know the story. It's an incredible story. It's about why Mississippi State didn't play Ole Miss for 3 years leading up to the 1915 season. Duty Noble only played against Ole Miss in football one time, and that was 1950 when State won 65-0. But you're going to read about the backstory. You're going to read about the things that happened and the cover-ups. And there's so much stuff that goes along with that. It's an incredible story. And when you read that chapter, you're going to be excited. Now, I've written a couple since then. We've written chapter 6, of course, that was, about some things about Duty you don't know as an athlete. And then he went to work, obviously, at Mississippi College. And then chapter 7, of course, is about his time at Ole Miss. And then now at this point in our story, he has been hired at Mississippi State as an assistant football coach and a head baseball coach. And that's where we are. And so probably end up somewhere around 20 chapters. I'm 7 chapters in, and I'll try to knock out a couple next week just to kind of make sure that we stay on schedule or perhaps get a little bit ahead of schedule. But, guys, I've written a lot of books, and I've written a lot about Mississippi State. And Riding Dogpile was a book I think I was born to write in many respects. But this book about Duty Noble, I think as far as the Mississippi State fan base goes, this may be the most important thing that I ever write. Because it's a book that should have been written 50 years ago about one of the most notable figures in Mississippi State athletics history. And so many of our fans say, hey, I know where Duty Noble Field is, but you don't know why we've named the stadium after Duty Noble. You don't understand his athletic accomplishments and things he did for Mississippi State. And so it's going along well. It is. And I look forward to probably, I don't know, maybe 2 months away from putting up pre-sales, maybe 2-3 months away. And you guys are going to be able to pre-order. And they're still discussing kind of the details behind doing a limited edition run. It's going to be more expensive, and it's going to be much different. I'll have all the details later, but it's going to be, for those of you that will want to keep this book as a keepsake, there's going to be about 100, 150 of these books printed of the limited edition variety. We'll do thousands of the regular one, but there's going to be a limited edition run that we're going to do that's going to be numbered. And it's going to have a different cover. It's going to be something that's very substantial that probably everybody that has a game day condo will have on their coffee table. Yeah, it's that kind of book. And so we're trying to do our best to make this very special because it is a very special book. And it is my honor to write this book and share this with the Mississippi State family. And it's so interesting. I get done with one chapter and I think I'll never top this. And then I dig deeper into the next chapter and I feel like I did, or I feel like I've at least, you know, kind of remained at that level. You start thinking, oh, there's this and there's this, and this isn't going to be as exciting. And then when you begin to finish and finalize your research, you realize, hey, there's a great story here too. And there's some interesting anecdotes in every chapter. Some things that, some things that you've wanted to learn, right? Some things that maybe there's some stories in there that some very humorous and some not, that really paint some color into what and who Duty Noble was. So there you go. Our next segment is here brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. I love Campus Bookmart. You will too if you don't already. Go by and see Campus Bookmart next time you're in town. See Miss Kathy Brown, the lovely, talented Susie. She married a drummer too. So got hands off, guys. Love her to death. And everybody associated with Campus Bookmart will do a great job for you because in their minds, it's like they're taking care of family and friends they haven't met yet. You're not a stranger to them. Going to Campus Bookmart, it's like coming home, man. It's right there, neatly positioned on the backside of campus. You can swing through and pick up all the latest and greatest in Mississippi State merchandise and then make your way over to one of Mississippi State's historic sporting venues. Yeah, cool stuff, man. If you can't make the town, visit them on the World Wide Web. We always encourage you to shop Starkville, shop local, rather than go order through some company. Go through Amazon or whatever. If you're looking for Mississippi State merchandise, you're not going to find a better selection than through Campus Bookmart of Starkville. So visit them at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays. It's BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That'll get you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than 75 bones, absolutely incomplete. All right. Let's do a quick recap of the Mississippi State's win over TCU in women's basketball in the second round of the WBIT. Bulldogs now 23-11 overall. They take down TCU 21-12. You know, we took care of Georgia Tech earlier in this tournament, but 7-point victory and a really, really, really impressive fourth quarter by your Lady Bulldogs. Stayed up, you know, up four after one, and then up nine at the break. Or excuse me, up eight at the break. And then TCU comes roaring back after their halftime adjustments are made. It's got a one-point game going to the fourth. And that's been an issue for us. There have been times we've run out of gas. Instead, State wins that quarter by six and ultimately wins the game by seven, 68-61. Really, really, really impressive game. Looking at the ladies here, Jessica Carter leads the way with 17 points. Ties for the lead of all scorers for either team. Jessica with 8 rebounds in the ballgame. 7 of 8 from the free throw line. And that's, we need her to be great from the free throw line, because as much offense as we run through her, she's going to get a lot of opportunities to hit the line. So nice to see her extend her Bulldog career. Ja'Kayla Jordan was really not a factor offensively in the Georgia Tech game. She certainly was against TCU. 15 points, also 5 steals in the ballgame. 6 of 13 from the floor, pulled down 5 rebounds, and handed out 3 assists. So really nice game for her. Lauren Park Lang with an 8-point contribution. Really good facilitator, too. 8 assists in that ballgame for her. Darian Rogers, just 7. Missed all 5 of her 3-point attempts, but still found a way to impact the game. Kind of uncharacteristic of her, too, that you know, she didn't get double-digit scoring. She's a lady that we certainly count on. Debrisha Poe, nice game for her. You know, she hasn't really been the factor offensively down the stretch here. 7 points and then the big steal late. And TCU was down 5, but Debrisha, you know, steals the ball to basically remove all doubt there. Aaron Barnum off the bench with 8 points. Miracle Shepherd with a pair. Jasmine Brown Hager, one of the heroes of the game against Georgia Tech, with 2 points. And then Montague with a couple as well. But your Bulldogs shoot 41.4%. Not stellar, but a little bit better than TCU. And again, very competitive ball game. So now you begin to think, okay, what's next? And we were waiting for that Penn State-Belmont game to go final from last night to kind of know what's next for Mississippi State. And people forget, you know, Belmont is one of those teams, too. They're always so well coached. They may not always have talent, but they're going to go out there and try to beat you with execution. And so we expected that game to be interesting. And, of course, Penn State wins. So on Thursday, and we'll talk more about Penn State on tomorrow's show, because we will be back tomorrow, we'll preview, you know, that Penn State game. But so we're done at the Humphrey Coliseum. The hump is done for this year. And so Belmont made that a game, though. Penn State wins 74-66. But, you know, they're just not enough to kind of finish. But so now the Bulldogs will head up to Pennsylvania for an interesting ball game. If you win that one, of course, you advance. And, you know, it's like you start thinking about all this stuff, too. You know, get past this third round, all of a sudden, then all of a sudden it becomes a neutral court event. But for all of you that turned out to support the Bulldogs, we thank you very much for that. And again, it's Thursday, 5 p.m. Central, so 6 p.m. Eastern. And again, we'll look more at Penn State tomorrow. But congratulations to the Bulldogs, and congratulations to Coach Sam Purcell. Because I'll be honest with you, if they had limped out of the gate against Georgia Tech, if we had pouted for not making the NCAA tournament, I wouldn't have been surprised. I'd have been disappointed. I wouldn't have been surprised. I wouldn't have blamed anybody, but I've been like, you know what? This is kind of unfortunate. But give Sam Purcell and this staff and, of course, these players a lot of credit. Says, you know what? Hey, we're still playing basketball. We're still representing Mississippi State. We still have a lot of pride in who we are and what we do. So let's go get after it. And they did. They did. And so they've given us a couple more wins in Humphrey Coliseum. And, again, it is the WBIT. It's not the NCAA tournament. But it's good to see us getting better in that respect. And, of course, Ja'Kayla Jordan's already announced she does plan to return for Mississippi State next year. And in many respects, the straw that stirs the drink. We're going to have to do some things in the portal around her. But certainly got to find a couple more shooters and centers. Sam Purcell, of course, he's recruited pretty well. Needs some younger players now to kind of step up and get some things done. But, you know, the offseason, we'll spend a lot of time covering men's and women's portal recruiting But this ladies' team is still playing. And so as long as they're playing, we're going to continue to support them and wish them the best. So again, congratulations, and we'll preview the Penn State matchup on tomorrow's show. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Had somebody hit me up just this morning wanting more information about the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. And you might say, Steve, you talk about it on the show, and I just kind of, I've heard it so much, I just kind of get through it. And then all of a sudden I remember, there's a cool place there, right? There is, super cool place, 5 bedrooms, couple baths, that great back porch area, the fire pit out there. Guys, you can go watch a Bulldog ball game and then go home and then congregate together around the TV, around that fire pit, cook some food. Full service kitchen there, so you can stock that refrigerator with some adult beverages, some steaks. I don't know what your needs are. I don't know what your preferences are. You could be vegan for all I know. It doesn't make any difference to me. It's kind of like CrossFit. You don't have to tell everybody, though. But all that understood, no matter your dietary choices in life, you can stock that kitchen. You can use that wet bar and just entertain and have a great event. Whether it's a staycation, whether you live in the Golden Triangle and say, hey, let's all get together and just kind of congregate under one roof, just enjoy getting caught up. How great is that? Or it's a work group coming to town, and rather than go get 5 hotel rooms and have everybody scattered and you can't find, hey, where's Joe? I don't know, he went to the room. No, he went and he was in the bar, you know. And then also too, you gotta hang out in that lounge and have that interloper wants to come in there and be part of your conversation. That's not always comfortable. You can have the privacy and convenience of the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Very easy to do. Just Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse. When you do, their Facebook page will come up and you can peruse all of the fine amenities that are available to you there. And you can book through VRBO or Airbnb. Now, if you want to save a little money, I can help you with that. Because traveling sometimes can be expensive. Can be. But to have a once-in-a-lifetime type event like this, you just get all the guys together, all the girls together, or have all the grandkids under one roof. You book through the Evolve website. I'll save you 10%. Promo code BSR10, BSR10, to get 10% off your stay. And you're staying multiple nights, you know, hey, a few bucks in your pocket I can save. We're happy to do that just by listening to this show. For free, you're saving money. Stark Vegas Clubhouse, absolutely fabulous place. I've been there. I've visited it. Some friends of mine used it. It is a great place. Whether you're bringing a work group to town or just your group, Stark Vegas Clubhouse can be your house the next time you come to Starkville. All right, let's take a quick look at the some SEC baseball stuff. As you guys know, the Bulldogs are going to play Samford. I'll give you a quick update or quick preview of Samford. Guys, these guys can swing it a little bit, too. I wrote the update this morning over at jeanspage.com. You can go read that story for free. But these guys, 16-7, they've won some ball games. Let's look at the schedule real quick here, just because of the fact it's important to know the quality of competition. They have challenged themselves a little bit, too, and played what we consider some Power 5 teams. But they got off early and played over at Joe Lee Griffin Field. Three abbreviated games against Queens to open, 12-2, 12-1, 16-6. So you know, the number's pretty gaudy in those ball games because of quality of competition. And Samford's a very solid mid-major program. You know, we got Colton Ledbetter from over there, too. What would we have been last year without Colton Ledbetter? Goodness gracious. They open up on a 4-game winning streak. They take down Jacksonville State and then hit the road for the first time. They go down to Central Florida, and these games really got away from them with one exception. Seven-inning game, they get beat 18-3, and then they lose 9-6 in the middle game on Saturday, and then they run out of pitching and get 10-run ruled in 7, 12-2 by Central Florida. And UCF, a really good team, too. The midweek game, not kind to them as well. They travel to Auburn and got beat 12-3. They return home to play Bellarmine. It always seems like there's so many teams in the Southeast that play Bellarmine. Pick up some wins here. And Samford, you're kind of taking care of business here too. Three of those 4 games ended in the seventh inning by virtue of the 10-run rule. 16-0, 14-3, 13-9. And then on Sunday, I guess they got tired of swinging. They went 8-3. Charleston Southern, they 10-run rule these guys in the first game of a doubleheader. I guess it wasn't to 7. They didn't 10-run rule those guys. They won 7-2. But they capped it at a 7-inning game and then played 14-3 in a 9-inning game. after that. And then the final game, the Sunday game, they take 12-7 and lose that game 12-7 to Charleston Southern. They had a four-game set at Purdue. They take that first game 5-1, lose 6-1, and then lose in extras 13-12, and then rally back another one-run affair on Sunday. So they split the four games with the Boilermakers. They weren't a great team last year. Of course, we took their best pitcher in Cal Steven. And then on Tuesday, they take care, last Tuesday, they took care of Jacksonville State 7-3. This past weekend, they had a three-game set against VMI. Another 10-run rule, right? 14-4, 16-9, and then they win 5-4. So they enter the game on a four-game winning streak. Now, that all understood, as I mentioned, these guys can swing it. They absolutely can. As a team, they're hitting 324. It's a veteran team, too. They're not just going to go out there and be intimidated. And yes, they haven't had the ability to beat a lot of top teams. They played eight games against Power 5 competition, and they're 2-6. Those two wins, of course, coming against Purdue. But 40 tanks as a team. But what stands out to me on these home runs is it's a dozen different players. It's not like, hey, you got two guys kind of carrying the load here. The home runs are kind of sprinkled throughout the lineup. Those guys can really, really swing it. They like to run the bases a little bit, too. The guy that stands out to me the most, obviously, is Garrett Howell. He is a senior from Dacula, Georgia, hitting .464. Leads the team with 39 hits. Also leads them with 9 doubles. He's got 4 tanks and 20 RBI. And then he's 12 for 12 on stolen bases. And you say, well, Steve, that guy's moving the bases, probably scoring a lot of runs. You're exactly right, Boneyard listener. Leads a team with 34 runs scored. That's the guy you got to keep off the bases. And that's been tougher to do. He's walked 21 times and struck out just 9 times. When you got a guy that's got 84 at-bats there and he's only struck out 9 times, that guy's putting the ball in play. Absolutely is. But it's not just him. It's not a one-man team by any stretch of the imagination. These guys are going to swing it a little bit. Pico making the start for us. We need Pico to be very good. Pitching-wise, they're going to start Jacob Newman. Jacob Newman is 2-0 with an ERA of 11.57. He's only worked 4 2/3 of an inning, and, of course, all 4 of his appearances have come in relief. This will be his first start of the season, though he was a spot starter a year ago, also a midweek starter and a weekend reliever. He's allowed 6 hits and 6 runs. He has struck out 6 and walked just 3. Opponents are hitting .300 against him, but it is a very limited body of work. He is a veteran right-hander. I know you guys are happy it's a right-hander instead of having to see another soft toss and lefty, but I think he will basically serve as an opener, and it'll turn into a Johnny Holstaff type day for them. It's so difficult when you have to see a different pitcher all 9 innings. It just is, because you never, ever, ever just kind of get settled in and figure out people's tendencies. But I suspect we're going to see a lot from them tonight. But we got to go over there and play ball. You know, we won that game last year 9-4, but we can't just show up and hope for the best. We're going to have to go out there and play for sure. And we need some guys to get right, too. A difficult weekend. A&M pitching was probably even a little bit better than advertised. Certainly Lampkin was really, really good. They were really good on Friday and Sunday with their starters. And so we're going to see a lot of different arms tonight. I'm confident of that. But, again, once we get done with Pro Day, I'll upload some video from that and then make the drive over to Birmingham to cover that game for you. So full coverage tonight over GenesPage.com. You can follow along on Twitter. I do a play-by-play article, too. So, like, if you just say, I caught up doing this, Steve. You know, how did we get to this point? Well, I keep up a pitch-by-pitch, play-by-play article at GenesPage.com for free. Yeah, because I love you. I do. Now, let's take a quick look. SEC, you know, last weekend, all the home teams won. All of them. That's an interesting dynamic, right? Shows how hard it is to win. So we'll take a quick look at the standings. Kentucky in the SEC East, 5-1. They take 2 out of 3 from Missouri. And again, Kentucky in a pretty good position, right? 20-4 overall. Nick knows how to schedule. Last year, they made it to a super regional and lost to the eventual NAFL champion. I could certainly see them in the tournament this year. South Carolina, probably the big surprise over the weekend. They sweep Vanderbilt. They won 5 games in a row. How about that? So good for Carolina. Offense kind of coming alive for them, too. And maybe that Vandy pitching staff isn't quite as good as we expect. Florida, of course, takes 2 of 3 from LSU. They're third, or tied for second. Georgia now 3-3. They won 4 games in a row. good weekend for them. Tennessee takes 2 of 3 from Ole Miss. Both of their wins, 10-run rule variety. Of course, Vanderbilt's lost their 3. Missouri now 1-5 in the league and 10-14 overall. Your Diamond Dogs, we'll see them later in the year, and we have to take advantage of that. Our last two times that we played Missouri, and they were the inferior team, they took the series, including against our NAFL championship team in 2021. The SEC West, your first-place Arkansas Razorbacks, they finally lose a conference game. They're now 19-3 overall. Auburn gets the Sunday game, but all three of those games, incredibly competitive. You know, Arkansas wins game 1-1-0, and then the second one 6-5, and had to rally from behind to do so. A&M Mississippi State are tied at 3-3, along with Ole Miss. A lot of people expected A&M to be really good. After watching them up close, again, I don't think they have a lot of length in that order. That's going to be the issue. They're going to go as Montgomery and Laviolette take them, and, of course, Grohovic's really good too. So, but once you get through Appel, there's not a lot about that lineup as it's especially dynamic. And so if one of those guys, you know, in the middle of that order, you know, hits a slump, they're going to have a tough weekend. And they did pitch it pretty well. When you've got a Friday night starter, and they do, you know, that is a great equalizer because you can go out there and win that ball game, maybe not have a great offensive night. But I do like the A&M team. I like them better after seeing them in 3 games than maybe I did early on. And so are they as hyped? They live to the hype. I don't know that I would go that far, but I do think you look at it and say, hey, the Sunday game, they had a hot pitcher and a bad umpire, and it worked in their favor. But take nothing away from A&M. They went out and took advantage of the zone that was presented to them, and they won the baseball game. Ole Miss, of course, you know, took that opening series against South Carolina and then lose to Tennessee. But they've done what they needed to do. They get a game in Knoxville, the middle game. LSU now 2-4, your defending NAFL champions, have lost both series. Lost at Mississippi State, a place that they have not lost a series since 2003, and then Florida takes a series with 2 years in a row, is that right? Or two times to Baton Rouge in a row? Yeah. They're 2-4. Alabama, I kind of told you guys they were fool's gold. Georgia gets the series against them. Alabama now 2-4 in the league, 18-6 overall. Auburn 1-5. Of course, Auburn had to win on Sunday. They're 15-8, but man, that was a really, really, really important win. Because you go 0-6, and now all of a sudden you start thinking 2 empty weekends when you're trying to get to 14, and now you've got to do it in 8 weekends instead of 10. That's tough. Really tough. Have I shared with you guys how much I hate the new refreshed SEC side? Have I said that? I know that I have. It is absolutely terrible. Absolutely terrible. And I don't know that anybody that cares is paying attention to what I say. But this may be the most user-unfriendly version of the SEC site that I have ever seen. It is absolutely terrible. I mean, even just trying to toggle between, like trying to find the schedule for the day, instead of me just clicking a button, I got to go in here and click like 3 or 4. But here are today's games. Little Rock, Arkansas Little Rock is at number 1 Arkansas. That's at 3 p.m. first pitch. Mercer is at Georgia. That's going to get underway at 4 o'clock Central. Tennessee Tech at Tennessee. Did you see the big news? Did you see it? Yeah. Maybe you didn't. Let me inform you here. Volunteer star Billy Amick, third baseman, having some type of appendix issue. He is out for tonight's game. If he has a has to have that appendix removed, it may end up being some lengthy time there. So you certainly wish Billy the best. Tennessee's a really good team, but they should be able to overcome that. Florida State tonight. That's 5 p.m. Central. Miami of Ohio at number 24, Kentucky. That's going to be later in the evening at 5:30 first pitch. Presbyterian is at South Carolina. That's also 5:30. Missouri at Illinois. That'd be an interesting game right there. That's a really nice Power 5 matchup if you're Illinois. You know, Missouri has struggled, but to get an SEC team in, they ought to be able to get some people there. Of course, Samford, Mississippi State at 6. Alabama is at Belmont. Also a 6 p.m. first pitch. Jacksonville State's at Auburn. They'll get underway at 6. Valpo at Vandy. Vandy ought to get right tonight. Houston Christian at Texas A&M. Austin Peay is at Ole Miss. That could be fun. That could be really fun, right? Southeastern Louisiana at LSU. And if you recall, LSU had to score 3 in the ninth to beat the Lions earlier this year over in Hammond. It'll be interesting to see how angry LSU is. But Yeah. We'll recap some of this tomorrow, but some interesting games. Have you kept up with Austin Peay? Have you? I did for a while, and then when they got to like 10 wins, I haven't looked. So let's kind of look together. Hold my hand. I'll look. I'll pull it up for both of us. So Austin Peay, looking at their schedule, you know, we lost to them, and again, I'll say it, we should never lose to them. And in both of those games, Mississippi State should have won. But they got a first-place vote in the preseason polls out there, and, you know, I share that with you because it's not like they just came out of nowhere, right? 11 Power 5 transfers, pretty crazy in many respects. But, yeah, their website's a little bit slow. You know, they swing it really well. And the Miller Green kid is kind of the straw that stirs the drink. But and now that they're kind of in league play, you expect them to go stack up some wins. Well, they're 15-8. Yeah, 15-8. It's true. If they've gotten into conference play, it's been a little bit different. You know, they, of course, took a game out there at Auburn. All you guys were aware of that. Lipscomb was picked to win the Atlantic Sun. And they go into Nashville and take 2 of 3 from Lipscomb. And then they played the Queens game, you know, that Queens team over the weekend, and the same one that Samford played to open the season. They take 2 of 3 from them. But, yeah, they're kind of moving along here, but they've lost some midweek stuff. But just kind of keep an eye on them. But they're playing at Oxford tonight, and I say let's go Peay. I don't know how you feel. That's how I feel. I can brush aside my own bitter resentment of losing to them and say, you know what, hey, if we had to deal with it, so should you. All right, let's get ready to get out of here. Hey, guys, I'm going to get this up for you guys, and then I'm going to head over to Pro Day on the Mississippi State campus, and we'll have full coverage of that over at jeanspage.com today. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.